Everyone loves a good story. How many times have you had a book, a movie, a song make you really feel something? Something deep and meaningful. Something you couldn't even describe. Stories have a power to take us on a journey. They show us new places and introduce us to new people. They draw us in, and we become part of the adventure. The best stories are the ones that show us something about ourselves. They unveil to us more who we are and who we could become. God's story is like this. It's a story full of mystery, action, miracles, war, drama, and love. This story tells of a great and faithful Creator who reveals the best way to live, a life of love, peace, and sacrifice. It stretches from the beginning of time, across our lives, and even into the future. It begins with new life emerging. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, Genesis 1:1. And it moves to completion with new life emerging again, Revelation 21:5. I am making everything new. God, the great author, continues to write this story and desires for us to find ourselves in it, discovering who we are and why we're here. If you will dive in and allow God to speak to you through the story, you will see things about God and yourself that you've never seen before. So let's jump into the story. At the beginning, where else would you begin at any good story? And so that's what we'll do. The story of creation. Genesis chapter 1. We'll start with verses 1 through 5. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the faces of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. Here we see in verses 1 through 5 that God created light. You see, verse 1 is a summary of the whole chapter. God created everything. The earth was formless, empty, filled with darkness. That is a description of life without God. Formless, empty, filled with darkness. Then God begins his masterpiece. He puts his first stroke on the canvas. And what does he create? He creates light. And suddenly there is order. Suddenly there is night and day. There's evening and there's day. And this is a description of our life as well. We were formless, chaotic, dark, without order, lost. But then God gives light. Let me read another account of the creation story. It's found in John chapter 1, verses 1 through 9. And you're going to see this theme of lightness and darkness being repeated and emphasized. John chapter 1, verses 1 through 9. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything that was made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but he came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. Jesus is the light. He gave us light. He gave us Jesus. He gave it to us from the very beginning. Without the light, there was nothing. Without Jesus in our lives, there is nothing. God sees what he made on the first day, and he declares that it's good. You see, God doesn't make junk. He looked at what he had made, and it was good. Let's keep reading. Verses 6 through 8. And God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the expanse and separated the waters that were under the expanse from the waters that were above the expanse. And it was so. And God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening, and there was morning, the second day. Here we see God created the waters above and below. God next takes his blue paintbrush and creates the sky, separating the waters from the sea from the waters of the sky. As we traveled to Puerto Rico this past week, we flew over that great expanse of an ocean. But there was water in the sky as well, as we slalomed around these huge thunderheads of clouds that raised thousands and thousands of feet into the air. I saw the water separated from below and above. Let's keep reading. Verses 9 through 13. And God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. God called the land dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God said that it was good. And God said, "Let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit, in which is their seed, each according to its kind on the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and the trees bearing fruit, in which is their seed, each according to its kind. And God saw that it was good, and there was evening, and there was morning, the third day. Verses 9 through 13 shows us that God created the land and the plants. God takes his brown and green paintbrushes, and he separates the water with land masses. God looks at what he did, and he says, "It's good." He looks at the great Cascade Mountains in Oregon and Washington, and he says, "It's good." He takes a look at the Grand Canyon and all its vastness and its beauty, and he says, "It's good." He takes a look at the Blue Ridge Mountains with their explosion of color in the fall, and he says, "It's good." He looks at the Swiss Alps, and he says, "They're good." He looks at the Nile River bringing life to all of North Africa, and he says, "It's good." He looks at the Amazon forest, and he says, "It's good." Surely, he couldn't create anything more beautiful, anything more spectacular, but he's not done. He creates vegetation with plants and trees and flowers. He makes plants to produce food and fruit. He looked at the banana and the fact that it has its own protective cover and that it actually even changes color when it tells you it's ready to eat, and he says, "It was good." He looked at the sunflower that follows the trace of the sun across the sky, like we should do, as we follow the S-O-N, and it was good. He looked at the rose and all its beauty, and he said it was good. He looked at the cactus that can go without very little water and live in terrible climates, and he said it was good. Surely God's done with this great piece of art at this point. Not done yet. Look at verses 14 through 19. And God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule at night, and the stars. And God set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the fourth day. Verses 14 through 19, we see God created the sun and the moon and the stars. God gave us the sun to warm us during the day, to bring life to the vegetation, to keep the darkness at bay, to be a constant reminder of the faithfulness of God. It's every morning the sun rises. It never does not rise. Every morning the sun decimates the darkness. A reminder of God's faithfulness to us. And God saw it, and he said it was good. But he didn't leave us alone in the dark either. He gave us the moon. The moon, placed just right in the sky, gives us our tides, the rising and the lowering of the oceans, just enough to give life and sanctuary to thousands of animal species, plant species, and ecosystems along the coast. The moon doesn't have its own light. It only reflects the sun. It reflects the sun to give us light, a reminder of who we are to be in this dark world, reflectors of the S-O-N into dark places. You see, God looked at the moon, and he said it was good. And God gave us the stars. The sun, our closest star, belongs to a galaxy called the Milky Way. Astronomers estimate there are about 100,000 million stars in the Milky Way alone. When we went to Puerto Rico, I got to go to the bioluminescent bay called Mosquito Bay and Vieques, Puerto Rico. It was an incredible experience. As we paddled out in our kayaks into that bay that's protected from light from a lot of communities, it's dark out there. And as we paddled into the middle of that bay, I looked up into the sky and I saw stars like I've not seen them in a long, long time. And I just laid back in my kayak and I sat in wonder at all the stars. And I saw the Milky Way stretch across the middle of the sky, knowing that that is like me looking into the frisbee and the density of the solar system, of our Milky Way. Not just our solar system, but the Milky Way itself. There's thousands and thousands and millions of stars. But that's just our Milky Way alone. Outside that, there are millions upon millions of other galaxies too. A billion reminders that it's not about us. It's about the vast majesty and glory of the Lord. A reminder that we are small and that our God is big. And God looked at the stars. And he said, it's good. Now surely after creating billions and billions of stars and galaxies and solar systems, God was done creating. God had finished his artwork. Not at all. Look at verse 20 through 23. And God said, let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanses of heavens. So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves within the waters swarm according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth. And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. On the fifth day, God created the fish and the birds. And now he got really creative. He created the seahorse, he created the jellyfish, the clownfish, the shark, the eel, the pufferfish, the goldfish, he created the salmon, he created the dolphin, he created the humpback whale and the blue whale. And he created those bioluminescent organisms, tiny microscopic organisms in that bioluminescent bay in Puerto Rico. We would paddle through the water, and as our paddles hit the water and push the water, or the water around the paddles would light up. It was those microorganisms in the water. When you put your hand in the water, it would light up. When you splash the water on your leg would sparkle. The tour guide told us that there were over 2 million of those organisms in 1 gallon of water in that bay. I marveled at the incredible creativity and wonder of God's creation in the waters. It is believed that there are over 32,000 species of fish in the world. And God looked at all of it, and he said it was good. He then turned to the birds of the air, and he created the robin that sings in the morning, the bald eagle, and the hummingbird, and the parakeet, and the parrot, the ostrich. He created the woodpecker. He created the whippoorwill. Scientists believe that the estimated number of bird species alive today are between 9,000 and 10,000. God looked at all the birds and all their diversity and their color and their creativity, and he said it was good. Surely God was done now. Surely he couldn't get any more creative. Surely his artwork was done. But God's only getting started. Look at verse 24 through 25. And God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things, and beasts of the earth according to their kinds. And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God created the land animals. God created the earthworm to bring nutrients to his plants. He made bees to pollinate his flowers. He made the lion to remind us of a king. He made dogs and cats to bring us companionship and remind us of the dependence we share on each other. He created horses that would help us labor even before we needed it. He created the sheep, knowing that one day sheep would be sacrificed for our sins for generations. He created the chicken, knowing that we would need sustenance and protein. He created spiders and bugs, each holding a purpose in the ecosystem. He created the deer and the skunk. He created the chimpanzees and the porcupine. Each animal uniquely designed, uniquely adapted to its environment, uniquely placed to help make an ecosystem healthy and thrive. There are 6.5 million, 6.5 million species found on the land. God looked at all that he had created, and he said, "It was good." But God was just warming up at that point. He saved the best for last. The stars would shine pale in comparison to his final creation. The diversity of the animals would all just be a prelude to the diversity he would place in his last creation. Everything he created to this point was just a child's finger painting compared to what he was about to do. Look at verse 26 through 31. And God said, "Let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. And God blessed them. And God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. And have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of the earth and every tree with seed in its fruit, for you shall have them for food. And every beast of the earth and every bird of the heavens and everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made. And behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. On the sixth day, God's masterpiece was made. And God's masterpiece is man. He was saving the best for last. As wonderful as everything he had made so far, it was really for the purpose of his last creation. It's interesting that after he created everything else, he said it was good. But after he gets done making his last creation, he says it was very good. His grand finale was man and woman. What makes us unique? What makes us very good? Well, here's the answer. We're made in God's image. We are image bearers of our Creator. It means every person bears the image of God himself. Every human being is worthy of honor and respect. It means that no human should be murdered or cursed. No matter how old they are, no matter what their quality of life is later in life, or no matter how young they are, even if they're in the womb, every human being has ultimate value because each human being is made in the image of God. What else makes us made in the image of God? We have the ability to hold the characteristics of holiness and righteousness. We have the ability to be like Christ, and someday we'll be totally like him if we're in a love relationship with him. The psalm says of man, God has crowned him with glory and honor. We're also made in the image of God because we can create ourselves. We can create children. Not just physically, certainly all the wild animals can do that, but not only do we create physically, we recreate spiritually and emotionally. We instill values and morals and the legacy of faith with our children that no animal can do. We have the ability to create disciples of our children, God lovers, God seekers in our children. In a sense, we create children of God. We can also create in our jobs. We can produce something that's uniquely ours, bearing our personality and our skills and our experiences, whether it's a piece of music or a piece of art, a piece of drama, a sermon, a homework report, a business plan. We have the ability to create and create creatively. You can produce something that nobody else on the planet Earth can produce. You are the ultimate creative creation. What does it mean to be made in the image of God? The ultimate reason, I believe, is that we can have a relationship with our Creator. We can know Him. We can experience Him. We can communicate with Him. He can come and live in us. Unlike any other being in creation, we can become the temple of the Creator. That's why all this was created. So we might be in a relationship with our Creator. It's why everything was created. It is our purpose. It is our meaning in life. You are made in the image of God, God's ultimate creation. You are God's masterpiece. Ephesians 2:10 says, "For we are God's workmanship," or some translations will use the word masterpiece, "created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do." Do you live like you're God's masterpiece? The world will tell you that you evolved out of sludge, that you crawled out of the ocean floor, that your existence is purely chance and random, that you're the result of millions of years of random collisions and evolving and natural selection based on pure chance and chaos. Is that who you are? If we believe that, we'll find our worth in what we look like, or how successful we are, or we'll look for our worth in our abilities to make money. If we believe that, we'll find our worth in how many friends we have, or how big a house we live in. If we believe we came out of sludge, we'll believe our worth comes from the clothes that we wear, the car that we drive, or the sports that we play, or whether we have a wife or a boyfriend or a girlfriend. If we believe those things, we'll find our worth in how others treat us or view us. But our worth does not lie in any of those things. Our worth, our meaning, our identity, our purpose all come from the fact that we are created in the image of God to live in a love relationship with our God, and He loves us unconditionally and fully. It may be hard for you to see the image of God as you live your life, as you get up in the morning, look in the mirror with your bedhead, your bad breath, and your rumpled clothes. But look closer in the mirror. Take a good hard look. You are the image bearer of the Creator. You have ultimate worth. 2 Corinthians 3:18 says, "And we, who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory, are being transformed into His likeness with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit." Take off the veil that society has put on you, the veil that says beauty equals worth, or success equals worth, or a boyfriend equals worth, or money equals worth, or grades or popularity equals worth. Take the veil off. See for yourself who you truly are. You are God's masterpiece. Here's what you are to do this week. As you walk down the street and you see a huge tree and all its grandeur, tell yourself, "That's a great piece of art, but I'm God's masterpiece." The next time you see a beautiful sunset or sunrise, tell yourself, "That's a great piece of art, but I'm God's masterpiece." As you see the stars in the night sky in all their depth and their number and their infiniteness, say that, "Hey, that's a great piece of art, but I'm a masterpiece." The next time you stand by the ocean in all its power and majesty and vastness, say, "Hey, that's a great piece of art, but I'm a masterpiece." The next time you see the mountains in all their color, say, "That's a great piece of art, but I'm a masterpiece." Second, embrace what makes you unique. What makes you a masterpiece? You are the image bearer of God because you have a relationship with God. Seek Him today. Seek Him tomorrow. Seek Him throughout the week. It's what you're created for. Imagine a Picasso never put on display, sitting in the basement somewhere. Imagine a work of Beethoven that was never heard. How sad would that be? Imagine if all the work of the great drama Romeo and Juliet was never performed. How sad would that be? Masterpieces were made to be seen and displayed. And you are a masterpiece, made to be in a relationship with your Heavenly Father. You live in your days, ignoring your relationship with God is like a Picasso sitting in the basement. You live in your life for you and not Him is like a symphony never being played. You making yourself the Lord of your life and not Jesus is like Romeo and Juliet or Hamlet never being performed on a stage. Be the masterpiece God has created you to be. live for him. Enter into a love relationship and live in a love relationship with him. Be the masterpiece you were created to be.